All right, Genesis chapter 30. Let's just catch ourselves up to this point in the text. So Genesis chapter 30, we're going to pick up in verse 25 here in a moment. But what's happening? Who's the subject of the account right now and what's happening with him? Nancy. Either.
This is Laban and Jacob working out their relationship. He's been there for 14 years.
Okay, so Jacob has gone up to Haran and he's there with Laban. He's had issues with Laban.
Well,
with the women.
Yeah, with his wife, but he did finally achieve marriage to Rachel.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's what we're rolling into here, this latest crop of issues. But prior to that, with Leah and with Rachel, what was happening there? Paul.
Well, Rachel was barren and Leah wasn't.
Okay, Rachel was barren, Leah wasn't, which means what? Well, she did give birth. She was having children, giving birth to sons. And then Rachel decided, well, I can't have children. He'll have them through my handmaid. Then Leah saw that, and she said, well, I'll give him my handmaid. And so there's a competition between the sisters on bearing children, having children for Jacob. And that causes all kinds of problems within that family, within that relationship, the marriage relationship. And again, the Bible is not endorsing polygamy when it talks about or it gives us the picture of Jacob being married to two sisters and then also taking their handmaids as his secondary wives or concubines. It's not endorsing it, but it is certainly showing us it's fraught with all kinds of problems. And the law of Moses later comes along and puts some regulation on those types of relationships. But it's come to the point now where Rachel has finally had a child. In verse 24, she called his name Joseph. And so she's had a child and is somewhat fulfilled in that. Of course, Joseph is going to become Jacob's favorite son. He's going to show that. So there's continuing to be this preferential treatment, the favoritism, the rivalry that flows through this family that started really all the way back, really with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael, and that rivalry that was originally created there. It flowed down into Isaac and Esau. And Jacob and their relationship to each other. So this is a generational problem. Nancy?
Well, even though Joseph was his favorite, I didn't actually ever pick up on the point that Leah gave birth to Judah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is really significant. I never picked up on that point before, that actually Leah gave birth to Judah.
Yes. Leah gave birth to Judah, which down at the end of the book, you find out, of course, that Judah is the one through whom Shiloh will come, the one, the Savior would come through him. So let's pick up here. Verse 25, let's read down through verse 33. Genesis 30, verse 25, let's read through 33. Who will grab that for us? Clint.
Blessed be wages, and I will give it. Jacob said to him, you yourself know how I have served you, and how your livestock has fared with me. For you have had little before I came, and it has increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn. But now, when I shall provide for my own household also, how far?
33.
He said, what shall I give to you? Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this for me, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from it every speckled and spotted sheep and every black lamb, and the goat spotted and the speckled among the goats, and they shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later. When you come to look into my wages with you, everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, shall be counted stolen.
Okay. So with this here, with the birth of Joseph and then Jacob going to Laban and saying, hey, send me away. I need to go to my own place, my own country. What do we know about the timing of this? What's the time frame we're talking about? Why is he now approaching Laban and saying, hey, it's time for me to go? Go back to the original agreements they made. What were those agreements? What was the first one? 7 years, I'll work for Rachel. Lo and behold, it was Leah. What deal did they make then? I'll work seven more for Rachel. Okay, so 14 years has passed. The idea is Joseph was born in that 14th, maybe the 15th year, but the contract has expired. He's met his end of it. He's upheld it. And so he's telling him, it's time for me to go home. I've done what I said I was going to do. Jacob, what this helps to tell us as well, Jacob always intended to go back to Canaan. He had just had to make a deal. Well, look, I want Rachel to be my wife, so I'll work 7 years. But then that went sideways. He said, okay, well, I'll work another 7 years. Well, now it's time. Let's go. It's for us to part ways now. So question number one on that sheet was, why did Laban want Jacob to continue working with him? Because Laban was not like, yeah, it's time to go. Farewell. Why did Laban want him to stay? He prospered greatly under Jacob's services or with Jacob's services. Any other thoughts there? Anything else on his mind? What is he, if you fast forward through the story, what else is on his mind? Carrie? Yeah, he doesn't want his daughters or his grandchildren to leave. Now, we understand his true view of them through what the girls say later, but he wants to keep everything under his control and under his influence. So he's telling him, yeah, I don't want you to go. And he attributes the prosperity. He understands it has to do with Jacob, but he notes in verse 27, well, the Lord has blessed me for your sake. So Jehovah's blessed me on your behalf because of you. Well, in the New King James, he says, I have learned by experience. In the ESV, as Clint read, he says, I've learned by divination. And divination is probably the more correct translation. So if it's by divination, what's that tell you about Laban? Okay, how does that jump out later in the story?
Well, it jumps out a couple of times. What always comes to my mind is actually Joshua, whenever he says, if you want to follow the gods of your fathers beyond the river, he can talk about Laban.
Right, and between here and there.
When they do leave, he comes after them because his household idols.
Right. There are household idols. Those come out in the story later. So he's a pagan idolater. He may believe that there is a Jehovah God, but he doesn't worship him exclusively. And we need to be able to make a distinction in that. Is when he makes references to the Lord of Abraham, to your God, or things, it's not him saying, I believe in Jehovah, that he's like an Abraham or an Isaac or a Jacob. That's not Laban. He's an idolater. Do you have something else, Nancy? Right.
They believe that there is a Jehovah God, but they're not sure that other superstitious things don't have some sway in your mind.
Right. There are people who say they believe in God, they believe in the Bible, but they also believe in ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody here better believe that. Okay. If you do, come to me, we'll talk, because it ain't so. Okay, so he says, don't go. I've been prosperous because of you. What does he tell him to do then? What does Laban offer to him, essentially? Name your price. Now, he would know, Jacob would know, that's within reason. Jacob couldn't say, well, give me all your possessions and I'll stay. You know, Laban would never agree to that. It's just like today in companies, if somebody's saying, look, I need to go, they say, well, just tell us what you want. That's not just a blank check, if you will. It's saying, within reason, tell us what you want, because we want to keep you. And he's saying, I want to keep you here. And it's purely for selfish reasons, really. So Jacob then strikes a deal and he lays out his terms to him. He reminds him, it's very interesting, verse 31, Laban says, what shall I give you? What's Jacob's reply to that? You're not going to give me anything. I don't know if you realize this, but what Laban's trying to do is put Jacob in his debt again. What he's picturing it, I'm just going to give you, you know. When somebody gives you a gift, that puts you in their debt. That makes an obligation, at least consciously. You know, you feel like, well, now I owe them something since they give me this. And he's saying, you're not going to give me anything. In other words, I'm going to earn what I get. Because he said, you know, I need to be able to take care of my family. Verse 30, he had already stated that. And what he's saying is, I worked for you all this time. And essentially, he's had food and shelter. That's been his wages. His true wages, as we understand, were the daughters. He worked to purchase them, is how Laban saw it. Now, understand in these societies that there was the bridal price. Just like when Abraham's servant went to find Isaac a bride, he took riches and wealth with him to give to the family. And that wasn't the same as buying a human being. That was just part of that negotiation and the social contract between them. And here, Jacob, because he came with a staff, he worked to pay off that bridal price. And now he's saying, I don't have anything. I need to accumulate something for my family to be able to take care of them. And so I'm going to work for you to earn this going forward, because he hadn't earned anything yet as far as material possession. So Laban agrees to that, but what does Jacob tell him he's going to do that makes Laban readily favorable to the deal?
Worthless, but you know, they're not worth as much as the solid color.
They were considered to be the inferior. And there's something else, that they were also more rare. So he's telling him, look, I'm going to take the inferior animals that are rare to be born among these, because most of them were solid color, purebred, so to speak. He's saying, well, I'll just kind of take the outcasts. That'll be my wages. And Laban says in verse 34, oh, that it were according to your word. He's saying, yes, you've got a deal. Now, any other thoughts before we press forward in the reading there? Clint.
31, it says that Jacob told Laban, I will again pasture your flock and keep it. That means the whole thing. I'll deal out what's mine when I earn it, but I'm going to keep the whole flock again, which goes back right back to what Laban already said. You've made me rich. Yeah, you can do it. You've done a great job. Keep doing it.
Yes. Exactly right. I'm still going to take care of yours, but I will start separating out those speckled, spotted, those miscolored ones. The goats, I think it is the brown, or the ESV maybe has black. Those were rare among the goats, the speckled, spotted. So he says, look, I'll go through and I'll separate all those out. But let's read 34 to 36. Okay, 34 to 36. Ron? Okay, let's pick up on exactly what's happening here. In verse 34, it says, Laban said, oh, that it's according to your word. Verse 35, so he removed that day. Who said he would go through the flocks and remove them out? What was the deal that was presented?
Jacob.
Who goes through and separates them? Laban. Laban takes control of it, right? This is again speaking to his character and his personality. He says, yeah, I'll agree to that. And then he goes and separates him out because he doesn't want to be cheated. He's always looking out for himself. Well, then he does that. And where do they end up, these speckled, spotted? What does it say he does with them, verse 35? Gives them to his sons. Why does he give them to his sons? So Jacob won't take them right now, but what? Who's the shepherd who really does well with the flocks? Jacob, who obviously doesn't do so well with the flocks. Laban's sons. Yeah, we'll put yours over there with my sons. And then verse 36, what do they do? And we're going to get three. Why is he going 3 days away? Exactly. That's the chief thing. He doesn't want those flocks interbreeding. So let's separate out all the inferiors. You, Jacob, take my good purebred flock. You take care of them. I'm going to take your ragtag flock over here. 3 days away, and let my boys take care of them. That's what's happened here. So they make this separation. Jacob's taking care of his father-in-law's flocks again in exchange for any that end up speckled, spotted, all of that. Now, let's read 37 to 43 in this admittedly odd thing that he does here. So, Genesis 30, verses 37 to 43. Mike.
Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and filled white stripes in them, exposing the white which had in the rods, which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had filled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the strife, and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock remained, Jacob would place the rods in the side of the flock in the gutters so that they might mate it by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys.
Right, so question two I had asked, how did Jacob react to Laban's unfair practices? And it's really this whole section, but how does he respond? Okay. He presses on. He doesn't go against Laban. He doesn't undermine him. He doesn't undercut him. He's not trying to destroy Laban's flocks. That is, you know, neglect them or abuse them or anything like that. But he's like, okay, I'm going to do this. And he ends up prospering. Now, anything else, Nancy? All right. What is this stripping and peeling of the rods and putting rods here and there and in the gutters and, you know, making them face one way versus another way? All right. Two explanations I think that are possible. One is this is just a record of Jacob has some kind of superstition and it's just recording for us. Yeah, he's doing this. And these things are occurring. Or what I personally would lean toward in this, and I admit I have no foundation for this, but that there's an unrecorded revelation from God that told him, do this and you're going to have these flocks. So it's like this. By the way, you could not take flocks today, strip wood of poplar, put it in front of them, and then they have speckled and spotted. It just doesn't work that way. We know through DNA, you know, genetics, it's just not going to work. But think of it like this. When God told them to go and to take Jericho, how did he tell them to take the city? Marching around quietly, 7 days, seven times, blow the trumpets, give a shout. What did that have to do with attacking a city and tearing the walls down? Purely obedient. It was not a military tactic. It was, do this. Doesn't seem like it's going to work. Doesn't make human logical sense. But do that, and you're going to take this city. And it could be that God had given him, hey, your flocks, here's what you do. And it had nothing to do with genetics, anything like that. It's just, will you do it or will you not do it? I'm just positing that as a possibility. It could very well be Jacob's just superstitious and this is what he does. John.
Well, regardless of whichever one is true, Jacob, when he's talking to his wives out in the field, he reveals to them that God showed him that God was going to do this. So God was in control of the situation, whether or not he did what you said. It was God's doing that all this happened, and Jacob knew it.
Okay, so that's to question three. What caused Jacob's prosperity? If you jump forward to 31 verse 9, God has taken away the livestock of your father and given him to me. So here's the thing I want to underscore. We read about him taking these pieces of wood, stripping them down, doing all these things with the flocks. Jacob, by chapter 31, by the end of the account, when he's extremely wealthy, attributes it all to God, not to a superstition or an idol or anything like that. He says, God's the one who's done this. And that's the bottom line of it. All right, any other thoughts in 30? Let's jump to 31. Let's read verses 1 through 3, please. Genesis 31, 1 through 3. Who'll grab that? Hank. Okay, so Jacob sees Laban's sons. He hears what they're saying. And what is it that they're saying, and why are they saying it? Any other thoughts? So let me ask you this. Had, from the point that they made the agreement to the point that we're at here, had Laban lost and been diminished in what he had? What had happened? What had happened was, Laban still had his flocks. He was still doing good. It just so happened that Jacob's wealth mushroomed. It blew up. And now the sons are looking at Jacob and they're saying, that should be all ours. It's kind of like this. Maybe somebody starts a business. They hire a salesperson. They make a deal with a salesperson. You know, you get 50% of every sale because they really want the sales, right? They put a huge incentive, and if you reach a certain amount, then you get this bonus. Then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they did that. And let's just say the salesperson's, their paycheck's $500,000, and the business owner's like, well, I'm only going to profit $250,000 this year. Wait, I want to take some of that back. That's what the boys are doing here. They're saying, he's done so well, that really should be ours and not his. But who's done the work? Who stayed up all night with the flocks? Who's rescued them? Who's taken losses when losses have occurred from animal theft and things like that? Well, Jacob's been the one doing it. He's been the one grinding it out day in and day out. They're just envious. That's all there is to it. Jacob had not hurt or harm Laban in any way. But their envy, their jealousy has arisen now. And what about Laban's? Verse 2. At the beginning of this deal, what was Laban's attitude? Hey, oh, that it were according to your word. Yes. And now he's not so happy. Because he sees all those speckled and spotted that were few and inferior, well, those are the really good ones now, and he's got a lot of them, and my flocks haven't increased like his flocks have. So he's very upset, and Jacob sees this. He sees it in his face, what his attitude is. So the Lord steps in and tells him what? Verse 3. Leave, get out, get back. It's time. So the Lord intervenes here and tells him point blank, you need to go back now. And we see Jacob is obedient to that. Any other thoughts?
Said, now you need to go. So he continues to do exactly what he was told to do.
Yeah, he does that. And even when he approached Laban for that, you know, hey, it's time to send me away, that new deal is struck. He's like, okay, I can earn something for my family. I need to do that. But he has not dismissed the idea, I need to go back. But when God told him, go back, he's like, I'm going back. Yes, he's a very materialistic, carnally minded man.
Well, also in this narrative, we can see how if somebody's struggling with something, they're already upset about something, it doesn't take very much negative influence, which came from his sons, to encourage that attitude to grow. So when people are already struggling, what you say to them can make a huge impact on which way they deal. I'm not saying
right.
But
right.
What I'm saying is, you can have a significant influence on somebody when they're already struggling with something with just a couple negative comments about that situation.
Right. And you also see this generational issue, the attitude of the father, that same spirit is in the sons, and they feed off of each other. Clint? Yes, yes, this is the unfolding of it. And the Holy Spirit here, it's very interesting. I mean, chapter 31, you have 55 verses. The Holy Spirit slows down and gives us great detail. I mean, 6 years has been jumped like that, and now a couple of weeks' time is slowed down and like, look at this, because this is an important thing that is unfolded or is unfolding here as we read through it. Let's read verses 4-9, please. Who will read 4-9? Go ahead, Philip. Okay, so he sends for his wives to come out to him in the field. That's because he doesn't want Laban or his sons hearing about what they're talking about. And so he lays it out to his wives. And one of the things he says is, look, your father's been against me, but God's been with me. You know, we run into people in our lives that are opposed to us, and that frustrates us, and we want to focus on that opposition, the person that's standing in our way or giving us a hard time. We can't do that. We got to focus on God and doing God's will, doing what we know is right. And Jacob's laying out his case to his wives here. Look, I've done what's right. I've not struck out against Laban. I've not tried to undermine. I've taken care of him. I've done all these things. And he just continues to mistreat me again and again and again. And he's changed my wages these 10 times. If, you know, the original agreement was any speckled, spotted, any of the brown or black goats, those are all mine. Then Laban, as he points out here, Laban sees, oh, well, there's more of those speckled being produced. Well, it's not the speckled anymore. You just get the streaked ones. Well, they changed the deal. What does God do? Well, there's more streaked ones being born. Oh, no. So he keeps trying to change these wages just like he did in the original agreement. Oh, you want Rachel? Well, I'm going to give you Leah. So he's still behaving that exact same way. But Jacob's case is, I've done right. God has been with me. God revealed in a dream. I need to go back. I've seen what Laban's doing to you. And so you head on back. Now then, verses 10 to 13. Who will read that? 31, 10 to 13. Elijah. Hey, Elijah. Yeah. Okay, so he lays out, God's revealed these things in a dream to me, the God of Bethel. He identifies himself where Jacob had made a vow. So you remember I told you I'd be with you. You can see now the evidence that I have been with you. Even though your father-in-law has tried to cheat you, I've been with you, I've blessed you, you have prospered, and now I'm telling you, go back. He made the vow to obey God, to serve him, to do his will. Since God had told him he would be with him and prosper him and bless him. So he's saying, now, Jacob, it's time for you to fulfill your part of the vow. You need to go back. All right. Now, verses 14 through 16, and we'll slow down just a bit here. So Genesis 31, 14 to 16, who's got that? Okay, so question four, what demonstrates Leah and Rachel's feelings toward their father? What's that, Paul? They don't owe him anything. Clint? Okay, part of the custom was the bridal price that was paid to the family, the bride got a cut of that. And what they're saying is, look, our father, when he gave us to you, has not given us anything, any portion of ours. All that work and all that labor that Jacob did in order to pay off that price and their agreement, and he prospered Laban. Laban's not given any of that prosperity to his girls, which he was supposed to do. And not only that, they make this point, he spent it. He's using it for himself. So it's highlighting Laban is a selfish man. He's treating his daughters as property and has simply sold them off for prosperity that he could expend upon himself. Any other thoughts on that?
Steve, I just want to comment as you describe these things to us and we're looking at this context that through God's providence, he makes it completely evident the nature that of Laban. And for them, there is no doubt the nature of this individual. So as they leave and depart, it's not with, should not be in any way, with any regret or remorse over the decision. God's basically closing the door.
Yes, he absolutely is doing that. And one of the things you recognize here is that if you were outside this family, you would think the daughters are always going to be loyal to the father. But you get this inside view, no, they've broken it. And we can't always look at a family as well, the way the husband feels, the way his wife's going to feel, the way the parents feel, the way the children are going to feel. That just doesn't work. Christians, something I've observed and experienced, that Christians, I've been closer to Christians in my life than my family, because we see things more alike. We're in agreement. We have that same foundation of the Word of God that we live by, and I don't have that with family. And so my loyalty lies with the Lord and with His people above all. Okay. Okay. Well, how have Rachel and Leah been before? What brought them together? Yeah, that outside enemy. They were focused on their own, I don't want to overstate this, but their own petty positions and, you know, me, what am I? Now they see, along with Jacob, look, we've got a problem here. Let's pull together, be together on the same page, and let's take the right action. It's not bad to have outside enemies, because the group then very often will pull together. And so these sisters are now united together with their husband to do the right thing and to go back to Canaan land. So Jacob flees with his family. It takes 3 days for the word to get to Laban, and then it says 7 days for him to chase them down and to catch up to them. And we're just not going to have time to read all of this through here. But I do want to read verses 22 to 24, so let's jump to that. 22 to 24, who will read that for us? Genesis 31, 22 to 24. Go ahead, Ron. Okay, so he pursues them, and that's a military term. He's hunting them down is what he's doing. His full intent, and later in the account, you see that Laban says, it's in my power to do you harm. Laban was ready to be violent to get Jacob, all the possessions, the girls, the grandchildren, to bring all of them back. That was his intent. But God appears to him in a dream and tells him what?
Be careful that you don't speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.
Why would he tell him not to speak good? Okay. Don't bribe him. Don't make him an offer. Don't put a deal on the table. Don't put any incentive out there to get him to go back. Don't do it, Laban. Right, right. he's telling him, don't say anything bad. Don't threaten him. Don't attack him. And don't try to get him to go back. God's saying, you leave him alone. Hands off.
Just a point of irony. It mentions that Laban takes his flock and puts a 3 days journey. So he's got to go shear these sheep, which is 3 days away. Jacob takes that opportunity to flee. So he gets a 3 day head start. Laban's got to make up the first 3 days. Second 3 days, but Jacob's making such a good time, he's got to go an additional day to catch up with Jacob. But I see a little irony in humor.
Right. And Jacob, he's got the wives, the children, all the servants who are with him, all the flocks that are with him. Laban doesn't have that. Laban's probably got his boys and other servants with him that they're riding fast and hard. Yeah, but it still takes him 10 days to catch up. But he's the one who originally put the 3 days separation between them. And it's coming back to bite him now, which, yes, that is an irony. That's funny. But God warns him, don't do anything. Well, then Laban rebukes Jacob. And again, just for the sake of time, somebody summarize what Laban tells him. Yeah, right, exactly. Like, there's no way my daughters would have voluntarily gone with you. You threatened them at the point of, well, he would say a point of a gun, but at the edge of the sword. That's the reason. You're just a no good, dirty, rotten scoundrel is what you are. You didn't allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. You know, I might have sent you away, verse 27, I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with trembling harps.
So was he obedient to what God had instructed him?
He's walking that fine line because he wants to cut into Jacob pretty hard here. But he's angry, he's upset. What the reality is through this whole thing is Laban has all of a sudden come to understand, I've lost it all. I have lost control. He's a pathetic old man is what he is. He's mistreated, he's abused, he's taken advantage of, and now it's all coming back on him. It's all gone now. Those girls, all the grandchildren, those flocks, the person who made me wealthy, he's gone. He's lost control, and he's having a hard time coming to full term with that. So then, one of the things he's upset about, as you read on down through there, is, you know, not only that, not only did you take my daughters and all of that, but verse 30, why did you steal my gods? Okay, one thing that's funny is, how could you steal God? It's mocking idolatry. How could you steal God? Well, you stole my gods. Well, if they're gods, how could they be stolen? They can't. Well, anyways, so Jacob tells him, look, you can look. If it's with anybody, what does he say he's going to do? If you find those gods with anyone among me, we're going to execute them. But he didn't know what. Rachel, his favorite wife, had taken them. And he goes, Laban does, he searches Jacob's tent, he searches Leah's tent, and he went to Rachel's tent. And it's interesting, it says in verse 34 that Laban searched all about the tent but did not find them. That searched all about is feeling. Okay, go back to Isaac. What was Isaac doing when Jacob went into him? He was feeling him. And here is Laban reaching around, feeling, looking for those idols. But of course, Rachel says, well, it's the time of women for me, and so I'm not going to get up. She was sitting on the idols in that saddlebag, which a lot of people who comment on this say, because of that time of month for her and sitting on top of those idols, that's a defilement of those idols. And it's saying that's either her so desperate to keep it hidden, or two, she really doesn't have any respect for the idols. She's taken them for a different reason, either to spite her father or because that indicated some kind of wealth and position in the family that she would hold them and hang on to them. But however that is, he doesn't find them. And then Jacob, it says in verse 36, essentially, he lets loose on Laban. He finally cuts loose on the man and tells him exactly what he thinks of him and how terrible he is. And they end up parting ways and making a covenant. So what is that covenant? Anybody? They make a covenant. Let's set up these stones here. Let's set up a pillar. I won't come on your side. You don't come on my side to do anybody harm. Yeah, that's essentially what this is, a common agreement of non-aggression. That's the best Laban can do. So now we're going to read where Jacob goes on back into the land of Canaan, Lord willing, next week. So Genesis 32 to 36 next week. We will move rather rapidly through that section. Don't bother reading chapter 36. I mean, you can read it. I, of course, encourage you to read it as a part of the Word of God, but we're not going to cover that in class with the genealogy of Edom and all of that. Thank you all.